Welcome, fellow travellers, and welcome to podcast 167 in our series You Should Have Been There with me, Mick Webb.
And me, Simon Calder. And this week we are celebrating Mighty Belgium, tourism's best kept secret, the answer to every traveller's prayer, hidden treasures, unexpected delights. Yes, all those cliches we mocked in last week's podcast. But sometimes a man's gotta say what a man's gotta say. So here we are outside a Belgian cafe brasserie called Von in South London's Balham, adjacent to the rather noisy and indeed windy AE24. Balham, like Belgium, has attracted a fair share of mockery over the years thanks to a Peter Sellers sketch from 1958, a mock travelogue entitled Balham, Gateway to the South.
But before we get on with our own travelogue about Belgium, here are the parish notices. And there was a very encouraging response to last week's podcast about travel cliches. Not least, Simon, your own promotional tweet about it. Villages nestle, markets bustle, beaches are palm-fringed. What's your least favourite trite travel term? And I should add, you craftily asterisked the phrase palm-fringed beach and added not Skegness. Anyway, that got a record number of retweets.
Well, thank you for them, and my favourite three offerings from listeners, and thank you so much for all your responses, were, well, first, John Wall. How many times do you hear somewhere referred to as an idyllic getaway? That's one cliche overused in tourism. The other one is, I love, insert city name here, signs in almost every city for Instagram pictures. And John's in the beautiful, very Instagrammable Gold Coast in Australia. David Smith warns to beware of descriptions beginning unspoiled, unmissable, unforgettable. And he says, for me, travelling through Heathrow on the evening of 9/11 was unforgettable. Neil Matthews says, snow-capped mountains, as if peaks should be covered in motorcycles instead. Also, did not disappoint. A terrible, lazy phrase. And Mick, what are yours?
Well, here are mine. Abby Butcher has, every hotel or chalet in the Alps is described by PRs as nestling in the mountains, and it drives me mad. Joe Browse brings three to the table. Number one, no one goes anywhere these days. They head there. Two, sleepy villages. And three, best kept secrets. Yes, we've managed that one already, haven't we? And our old friend Rebecca Halpern has this to say. I hate the current trend of describing destinations as overrated or underrated, as if all the wonderful complexities and nuances of a place can be reduced to some type of scoring system, often based on just visiting the must-see sites.
Well, let's say 10 out of 10 to Rebecca for that under our scoring system. And a quick roundup of other listeners' pet hates and other votes for nestles or rests from John Jay. Both ridiculous terms, he says, to describe the location of holiday cottages by serial offenders like Holiday Cottages UK and Sites Cottages. Jeff Spink says boats always seem to bob, don't they? Anne Turner has had enough of smiling locals. Alistair Wade simply says boutique hotel. And Mark Constable is very much a man after my own heart. Staycation, he says, that's a holiday where you stay at home, not a holiday in the UK, which is what most people have done since forever. Dr. Mark Shanahan, Azure Seas, friendly locals, there they are again, smiling away, and hidden gems. And finally, Naomi Langford Wood, not to be missed.
Like our podcast, I might say. One last one from Amanda, Instagrammable. Yes, very good, Amanda, I agree entirely. Anyway, apologies to any we've missed out, but let me end with an entertaining late entry from Tracy Starr to our collection of absurd reasons for travel delays, which you can, by the way, listen to in podcast 163. Tracy writes, one of my favourite lost in translation moments from the Nanjing airport back in 2006. I believe the Chinese version actually said weather is to blame, but the English leaves room for speculation. And Tracy includes a photograph of the departure board with the words, flight number CA931P for Beijing has been delayed due to some reason. And I've got to say, you can't say fairer than that, can you?
No, as long as fairer than that is not a cliche. Now, Belgium, where to start and where to find out about it, seeing as Belgium doesn't have a tourist office in the UK anymore. Relatively few communities of Belgian people, even fewer cafes, bars and restaurants that admit to being Belgian. But luckily, here in the Café Von, we have the owner, Von, to give us some insights. Von, you're not technically Belgian, are you?
No, I'm not. I'm originally from Hong Kong, but before I pick up my business, I used to go to Bruges very often, every year, 2 to 3 times. I just love the vibes of Bruges, like the old market square, like the evenings, like the Belgian beers, or the mussels waffle. I just really love it. So when I get a chance to pick up my business, I just choose it as my film.
So you've brought the essence of Bruges to your menu here, haven't you?
And I'm just looking here at the menu. My goodness me, if you're not feeling hungry, you will be in a minute. The Von Belgian breakfast, classic waffle, sausages, smoked bacon, fried eggs, grilled tomato and garlic mushroom. And studying the marvellous menu, which has, I think, 17 different kinds of gin. Of course, it also has some very good Belgian beers. Barvo Pilsner, that's your kind of everyday beer. Brugse Zot Blonde, 6%, and Delirium Red.
Well, you said that it was Bruges that inspired you to open these two restaurants in South London. What's your favourite part of Bruges?
Yes, my favourite part of Bruges is definitely the old market town. An evening walk around there, and also around Christmas time with the twinkling night, is really magical. And also I love the canal, so if you have the time, highly recommend like a little boat trip along the canal. And on the summer day, it's really good because it takes you through all the like major attractions. And normally it takes me to one of my favourite restaurants, like in Bruges, like to stop by for my first lunch, that normally. And the name is called Brasserie Cambrinus. And it is a very traditional Belgian pub and bar. You can try so many different like Belgian beer over there. And the food over there is definitely divine.
Well, I can tell you that earlier this year, Von, I actually went to Cambrinus, which, if I remember rightly, claims to stock 400 different varieties of Belgian beer. And I didn't try them all. I probably wouldn't be here if I had done to speak to you. But it was a very, very enjoyable trip and included an attempt to visit some of the locations of the film in Bruges, which has become a bit of a hit over here. And anyway, I did compile a short audio diary of my visit.
Fantastic.
Well, Bruges is very rich tourist fare indeed. This is the little street that runs between the two main squares, the Bourg and the Markt. The sound of the bells from the belfry, the clashing accompaniment just now of a barrel organ, and a whole array of smells of rich chocolate coming from a waffle shop where people are eating waffles dipped in chocolate on this very cold Sunday morning. Quite a lot of tourists and quite a lot of locals with dogs. Well, this is quite disappointing. I'm in Queen Astrid Park in Bruges, and I think this is the place where one of the more memorable scenes in Bruges took place. When Hitman Ken was going to kill Hitman Ray, and then decided not to. But I can't see the bench that Ray was sitting on. It's a bit dispiriting, really, and the weather is absolutely vile. Nobody would have wanted to kill anybody outside in this weather. And also, it's very challenging for tourists who are wandering around
following guides who have umbrellas, but everybody has an umbrella because it's so wet, and then standing shivering in front of memorable spots. And it's also very difficult to take selfies while actually keeping the rain off you. So one way and another, could be a better day for sightseeing in Bruges. Well, I'm sheltering from the rain inside one of Bruges' churches, one of its most iconic churches, the Church of Our Lady. The church boasts the second highest brick-built tower or spire in the world, 115 metres, and a mighty thing it is. But the most impressive treasure is inside the church, and it's what I'm looking at the moment, Madonna and Child by Michelangelo. I think the only one of his incredible sculptures not to be in Italy. And here it is, beautiful white marble, perfectly realistic from what I can see from some distance away, because obviously you're not allowed to go up and touch it, and quite large, about 1.34 meters, and it seems to almost glow with an ethereal light. It has actually been stolen on a couple of occasions from Bruges, first by Napoleon, who took it away for his Museum of Paris, but then with the fall of Napoleon it was taken back, and then Hitler also grabbed it. Again, it has been restored to its rightful place. And very fine it is too. Right, this is a proper Bruges experience. Walking slowly up the steps of the belfry to what I hope will be a wonderful view of the setting sun over Bruges. There are quite a lot of steps. I forgot to look and see how many, but now there seems to be an even narrower bit up, further up to the top. There we go, and this is it, and here we are, and you can see pretty well the whole of Belgium, I should imagine. You can certainly see very clearly the even higher spire. Is that right? Is that higher, that one, that tower for Our Lady? I think it is. And then the not so high, rather squat pinnacle of the cathedral. Oh, here it says this tower is 800 years old. Well, just time for a quick photo in the last of the sunlight, and then oh dear, I've got to try and get down.
I can assure you from very close up, those bells were absolutely deafening. But let's get beyond Bruges, Simon, because it's not the only city in Belgium that is well worth a visit.
Well, my goodness, I would always say that Ghent is actually a cut above even Bruges, although I know that you and Von love the place. So Ghent, about halfway between the coast and Brussels, the capital. It's very, very ancient, not least you've got an 800-year-old building right next to St Michael's Bridge in the heart of Ghent, which is now the Hostel Upperlink. Yes, and last time I was there, €21 a night for a bed in a dorm, and also the cheapest beer in Ghent. Many other places where you can take a drink, not least a wonderful location where you actually have to surrender your shoe in order to in order to drink. Let me tell you how this actually works. So, it's called De Dulle Griet, the shoe pub. They've got 350 varieties of beer there, so not quite as many as Crambinas in Bruges. But they do not trust drinkers to not to leave with their lovely glasses that they have there. So, therefore, you have to remove a shoe. It gets stored up at the ceiling. And then finally, when you've had enough and you're maybe feeling a little bit legless, you're definitely shoeless, you ask for your shoe back. It's great fun. And the whole place, because it's got lots of students rather than lots of tourists, I actually adore. You've got, of course, cobbled streets, but you've got some really good street art as well. You can even go, and I love this, they've got a velodrome on the edge of town, and if you remember Sir Bradley Wiggins, you can actually basically he was born just next to it, and you can whiz around the velodrome, just rent a bike there and off you go. So from all points of view, Ghent, I think, is well worth, if you're going to Belgium and you're going to Bruges, then please go along to Ghent, and you will have a lovely time and have plenty to drink as well. But don't forget your shoe.
So that's Ghent, and drinking yourself until you are shoeless, a splendid concept. But what about the other cities?
Well, of course, everybody, I think, tends to converge on Brussels. An interesting city, because of course Belgium is something of a sort of relatively recent construct on the map of Europe, and they had to put the capital somewhere, and they put it in
1830-ish, isn't it? 1831, I think.
I believe you were at the opening ceremony. It's still growing up, which I think is part of its appeal. Of course, the Grand Place is superb, and you have the European Quarter, just all these amazing buildings to do with the fact that it's also the capital of the European Union, effectively. But there's loads of different neighbourhoods, there's some spectacular art museums, really good street art, again, often celebrating Tintin, and more great places to eat and drink. And indeed, it said sometimes that basically you put on a kilogram for every extra day you spend in Brussels.
But I think that's also true probably of Antwerp, which again I've never been to, but is, I believe, associated with good food and shopping.
And a real cultural hub. I have been there many times, and Antwerp, I think, feels much more of a complete city than Brussels. Of course, it's extraordinarily important in maritime terms, very much also a hub for the European diamond business.
Oh, really?
Therefore, very rich, spectacular city centre, actually the most beautiful railway station as well in Belgium, and some would say in continental Europe. And from all points of view, again, well worth staying there. I mean, you could quite happily do a week of just hopping from one Belgian city to another. They're all clearly very close to each other.
Yeah. Well, I could also mention Leuven, or Louvain, if you're taking the French or Wallonian pronunciation, famous for its breweries and its university. Tournai for its cathedral, Ostend, of course, a rather sort of charming seaside city, Spa, which is the original Spa.
Yes, it certainly is, and that's also a great place if you want to explore the modest mountains of Belgium. You can actually go skiing there, and the Independent's former skiing correspondent Stephen Wood says that if there is a sudden snowfall, the best place, if you happen to be based in southern Britain and you want to go skiing, just hop on Eurostar or Eurotunnel and turn up in Spa, and you will have you'll be able to ski to your heart's content.
Well, I know it is a small country, and it is quite a populous one, so 11 million people. So it is tempting to think there isn't much countryside and outside to enjoy, but that's not necessarily the case, is it?
No, certainly not. I've had some beautiful cycle rides through particularly Wallonia. This is the French-speaking, hilly, wooded area, and it is a joy. Here's what I wrote last time I was there. Even on an overcast day, the landscape takes on a monochromatic beauty, a delicate pencil sketch of hedgerows, crops and trees. It gets better while climbing to shrug off the trucks and the townscape. You cross into another valley. After the Eau Noire comes the Eau Blanche, a young, fast-flowing tributary. Not quite the whitewater rapids that its name suggests, but capable of carving a course through southwest Belgium. The grand finale is the chateau at Chimay, which you deserve to visit, guided tours only, as a treat before awarding yourself a Chimay beer. But if you feel the need for a little more cycling, may I recommend Highway 99. This isn't quite Belgium's equivalent of Route 66, but it is a superbly engineered 15-kilometre sprint to the French border.
They don't write them like that anymore.
Thank goodness for that. And I was actually very close to the highest point in Belgium, which is Haute Fagne. That's in the Ardennes, and it's almost 700 metres, 2,276 feet.
Well, continuing with some of the lesser known, oh, sorry, another cliche here, aspects of Belgium, we also should consider its lengthy and really rather interesting coastline.
It is a glorious coastline, about 70 miles of pretty uninterrupted beach. Really just the harbour at Ostend and Zeebrugge gets in the way. And if you've got young children, and I certainly took mine there when they were just really toddling, it's very wide, very safe. And the sun, thankfully, isn't too strong as you gaze out into the North Sea, where actually there's always quite a lot happening because it's a very, very busy bit of water.
Well, I actually sampled it for myself on an extraordinarily and unusually sunny day last January. Well, this is an absolutely stunning winter walk along the beach from De Haan towards Blankenberg, which is a couple of hours away. This very wide beach, virtually nobody on it apart from lots of seagulls and shells crunching underfoot, and a very calm looking sea, which I'm sure it wasn't yesterday. In fact, we didn't complete the walk to Blankenberge, but after a couple of hours traipsing along the beach and through the dunes, we hopped on a passing tram. Yes, it's a marvellous piece of public transport that connects all of the resorts and little towns along the Belgian coast.
It is a magnificent piece of public transport, this tram that runs the entire length of a country, all the way along the shore from the French border to the Dutch border.
Having had my interest in Belgium piqued by Bruges, I think that what I'm going to concentrate on next is a couple of themed visits, because given the size of Belgium, not very big, it's extraordinarily good public transport system. It lends itself to, for example, touring and visiting all its splendid cathedrals, or maybe war tourism, which isn't so much my thing, but I know lots of people very interested, obviously, in revisiting, Ypres, Mons. There's a place called Bastogne, which was the site of the Battle of the Bulge, which I'd actually not realised before, where there's an incredible Wood of Peace, which you can go and see.
Belgium has been a place of slaughter, very, very sadly. 600,000 people died in the country in the First World War alone. And the best place to find out more and pay your respects is the In Flanders Field Museum in Ypres, which is in the reconstructed Cloth Hall. And it's a symbol of wartime hardship and recovery.
Yes, and at the other end of the touristic scale, I am going to invest some time and possibly invent, I don't know if it already exists, a surrealist trail. Because apart from Magritte, there's a very, very good museum to his works in Brussels, there are several other much lesser known Belgian surrealists and a whole wealth of fascinating weird sculptures and street arts scattered around pretty well everywhere, particularly in the Flemish speaking part of Belgium. And there is one exponent of surrealist art in particular whose museum house I really want to visit, and it is a mere cycle ride from Dunkirk, and so therefore very easy to get to from southern England. This fellow is called Paul Delvaux, and you can find his works in a place called Saint-Idesbald, which is just outside the much better known holiday resort of Coxide, which does sound funny, but he is extraordinary for his, I suppose you might call, his combination of bizarre obsessions, which are very serene and usually not very dressed women, railway stations and skeletons, often together on the same canvas. Very eerie and disturbing, I think.
It does sound weird and wonderful. I'm going to be concentrating on the fact that I think in Belgium you get four countries for the price of one. May I explain? So Belgium, in the list of the world's great countries, is 136th place, squeezed in terms of area between Moldova and Lesotho. And so it's not a huge place, actually 1.5 times the size of Wales. But the great thing about it is that you've got the Flemish-speaking or Dutch-speaking area of Flanders, French-speaking Wallonia, Brussels, which I think is a special case, and you could just survive for the whole time there speaking only English because it is such an international capital. And then don't forget, over to the far east near the German frontier, you'll be in Ostbelgien, where they speak German, about 70,000 of them. So you can be in kind of ersatz Germany. And indeed, while you're there, don't neglect climbing to the top of this wonderful hill where the boundary of the Netherlands, of Germany and of Belgium all meet.
Am I right in thinking that actually Wallonia, the French-speaking part of Belgium, is perhaps rather surprisingly the poor relation economically?
I believe so, yes. It's largely rural. It's got old coal mining areas, yeah, such as Charleroi. The great city of Liège is, I find, a tiny bit forlorn compared with the very handsome Flemish cities. So, yes, but it's all worth exploring. And frankly, yes, if you can't find it in Belgium, you're almost certainly better off without it.
Well, that's very good. And in a nutshell, I suppose, we can say that Belgium punches above its weight.
We can do, and we're not going to name five famous Belgians because that would be a cliche, but special mention of course to Jacques Brel, astonishing composer,
and indeed astonishing hip-hop artist, rapper Stromae, who I would like to give a shout out for.
Well, in that case, I'm going to see Stromae and raise you plastic béton, ça plan pour moi.
Well, don't forget, we'd love to hear any contributions that you would like to make to our list of unmissable Belgian experiences.
of which there are many, and we look forward to hearing you. You can tweet us at YouShouldHaveBT or leave us an audio message at anchor.fm/YouShouldHaveBeenThere. For now, though, that's all we have time for, not least because we may be straying inside to enjoy some Belgian music and maybe even something on Von's special beer menu.
Well, I don't know about you, Simon, but I'm not quite ready for that 9% beer at this time of the morning. So until next week, from me, Mick Webb,
and me, Simon Corder, goodbye.
Goodbye.